Mr. President, and friends, you have done me great honor in inviting me to address your club. I have been in your country for a little over 3 days. I have been looking forward to visiting it since long. Now I have come here for a specific task, to seek aid and assistance for implementing the plan that we have prepared for the defense of India against external aggression. I have had during the last 3 days the useful discussions with the Secretary of Defense, Mr. McNamara, and his colleagues. I have had also the pleasure of meeting prominent people in the political and other walks of life of your great country. I'm going to talk to you frankly, and I presume you would like me to do so, about some of the problems that we are facing, particularly in the context of Chinese aggression against India. This could be appreciated only if one could know the objective that China had in mind in committing military aggression against India. I consider that China had 3 primary objectives. By asserting its military superiority, China wanted to create for itself an image of the strong nation in Asia. China wanted to disrupt our efforts of planning and economic development through democratic processes. China wanted to establish itself as a political power in Asia, as a prelude, as subsequent events have shown, to asserting its leadership over the communist group of countries in the world. With the achievement of independence in 1947, India emerged as an integrated democratic country, and from the beginning, it wedded itself to the democratic processes of planning for its economic and social development. It adopted a constitution with freedom and democracy as its 2 cornerstones. These were the 2 precious gifts which your President Washington gave to you as the head of the Revolutionary Army and the architect of your constitution. Our constitution, while declaring India as a sovereign democratic republic, gave to the people rights of liberty, equality, fellowship and justice, and a right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. In this respect, it almost echoed the words and phrases of your constitution. In external affairs, our country adopted a policy of non-alignment. It was a policy not born out of any desire to stay aside and aloof from what is happening in the world. It is a byproduct of our historical experiences and philosophical development. To a country which lost its freedom as a result of pacts of trading rights and small traditional concessions, there is a natural suspicion of any military involvement. It is a policy which commits us to freedom, peace, and peaceful methods of bringing about changes. We support freedom from colonial rule. We support racial equality, peace, and international cooperation. I am glad to see that this policy has slowly won recognition and understanding that has become an integral part of international pattern. It is being increasingly recognized that this is a legitimate policy suitable specially for the emergent Afro-Asian states for whom the economic development must have the highest priority. In the field of economic development, without deviating from democratic principles and practices, we launched extensive programs of development and modernization in various fields: agriculture, transport, communications, irrigation, industry, education and health. Far-reaching land reforms were introduced. An economy which is still predominantly agricultural is today steadily being transformed by the spread of industrialization and completion of vast new projects in the fields of power, transport and irrigation. With the implementation of the 2 5-year plans between the years 1951 to 61 and of the third plan in the midst of which we are today, our food production increased by 37%. The installed capacity for electricity went up from 1.8 million kilowatts to 4.6 million kilowatts. The life expectancy was 27 years in 1947. It is now 42. In 1947, 100 million cases of malaria developed annually. Today, this debilitating disease had nearly disappeared. 4,000 new hospitals have been established. In a country where 15 years ago only 10% were literate, today the literacy is 24%. 48 million boys and girls are getting education. I would like to mention here that we could carry the message as well as the benefits of our 5-year plans to nearly 56,000 villages in our vast country to the community development projects. The U.S. government and the Food Foundation, Store Foundation, with whose help these projects were initiated, have contributed a great deal to this process of changing the face of India. The scheme of community development has given a new life to the rural economy, which was stagnant, and has helped to kindle new hopes and incentives and aspirations for over 80% of the people who live in rural areas. In most parts of India, a process of progressive decentralization of authority has started from state governments to bodies elected at the district level and further down to the elected villages councils. These bodies have been delegated both powers and resources to carry out schemes for development. Community development scheme is the base of our democracy, which enables active participation of the people from the village level. The sum total of our efforts since independence has been that from a backward agricultural economy, India is being transformed into an industrially developed country with proper agricultural base. In the short span of 12 years since we started implementation of our economic development plans, if I may use the expression so often used by our Prime Minister to describe the transformation, India passed from the bullock cart age to the bicycle age. This may not be saying very much in an industrially and economically advanced country like yours, but in a vastly underdeveloped country like India, with an ever-increasing population, a tremendously large effort is needed to make even a small impact. And therefore, the significance of this transformation for us, with a population of 440 million, is quite significant. In 1962, this is how the world looked at India. China, which had recently emerged after centuries of imperial and foreign rule, was building itself militarily and economically through other methods. While we were glad that the Chinese people were making efforts to develop and progress through their own economic and political systems, it was obvious that our progress with democratic means And our image as a country aligned to neither of the blocks was something which did not suit Chinese thinking or objectives. At that time, China also confronted herself with ambitions of leadership of the communist world. It was probably waiting for some opportunity to assert not only its military strength, but its ability to take actions independently of the Soviet Union, the acknowledged leader of the communist nations. Just at the time when USSR was involved in a critical war of nerves with USA over the Cuba affair, China launched aggression against our country. The avowed object was no doubt satisfaction of some territorial claims, but the aggression was also meant as a threat to our right to order our lives in our own way, to our right to freedom and democracy. Immediately after the aggression, our Prime Minister appealed to friendly countries and sought military and other assistance to repel the aggression. The manner in which your great President Kennedy, the people and the government of the United States reacted to the proposal, and the promptness with which they extended assistance to India at that time is something for which we shall ever be grateful. As I said in the beginning, I have come here to seek assistance for implementing the plan that we have prepared for the defense of India against external aggression. You may ask, what does this planning represent? Does it mean that India is on the way to militarization? Does it mean that India is on its... Have we ever overassessed the Chinese military strength, overassessed her capacity for military action or her military threat? I would like to tell you that we are not militarizing. We are a peace-loving people, and we realize the dangers inherent in building military strength beyond our needs and beyond our resources. Our program for building up our defense potential is based on our appreciation of existing Chinese threat. Our plan for the expansion of the armed forces, the modernization of its equipment, the expansion and modernization of the Air Force, and the establishment of adequate and proper defense production base is what we consider the minimum to face the Chinese threat. Even the minimum we have to spread over a certain period, maybe 5 years, maybe 7, because today we have not resources, particularly the foreign exchange resources, certain plans and machinery and technological skills, which are the prerequisites for implementing the plan. The plan thus represents the effort that has to be made to build up defense potential to adequately meet external threat to our borders in the immediate future. What is the assessment on which we are building up this defense potential? As I have already mentioned, it is a threefold threat. It is a threat to our territory. It is a threat to our economic development. And thirdly, it is a political threat, a threat to our way of life. We consider ultimately, it is a threat to those countries who share and treasure with us the same pattern and values in life, in the mode of economic development. For the last 5 or 6 years, China has been staking claims on some Indian territory. There were small border skirmishes between the Chinese troops and Indian troops stationed in those particular areas. To satisfy its territorial claims, China was continuing its military build-up, strengthening its posts and roads on its sides of the border. While this was going on, looking to the long and traditional peaceful relations between the Chinese and Indian people, almost 5,000 years old, and China having signed the Pancasila agreement with us, which advocated use of peaceful means for settlement of disputes, India never thought that the government in Peking would go as far as to commit aggression against India. India's fate in China was belied and shaken when it let loose its military forces against us in October 62. After the ceasefire, the Colombo powers made certain proposals for starting talks with China. We have accepted them. But the Chinese government have not. Even if these talks start, it cannot be ruled out that the Chinese government will not again use force and commit aggression when it finds an opportunity to do so. Our information is that the Chinese forces across our northern borders today are in larger strength than that they were in November 1962. We have consolidated their positions. They have consolidated also their positions and built new roads and new airfields. They are building up logistical and other supports. The Chinese intention may therefore be to launch aggression against our soil at a time that suits her, at a place that she chooses. This military nature of the Chinese threat has further increased because of the new relationship that has developed between the government of China and the government of Pakistan. Their alliance is an ominous one for us. This alliance is a matter of deep concern to us. Despite temporary differences between India and Pakistan, they are the same people with the same culture, tradition, and have inherited a common history. If anything goes wrong seriously in either of the two countries, it is bound to affect most adversely the other. When China committed aggression on India in October 62, instead of offering understanding and assistance, Pakistani representatives toured various capitals of the world, propounding a fantastic plea that it was India who committed aggression on China. In this insidious game, it is the Chinese who are making the most out of this alliance. But more significant than the threat to our territory is the nature of the Chinese threat. The picture of the democratic India, achieving progress and development by democratic means, was against the basic political objectives that Peking had in mind. By committing military aggression against our country and keeping up military pressures against our borders, China hopes that we shall drop our plan for economic development, reduce our pace of implementing such plans and cripple our economy under the burden of defense expenditure that we have to incur for meeting their challenge. Therefore, the Chinese state has to be assessed in terms of the stresses and strains that it will put on our economic development. Thirdly, the political nature of the threat. This arises from the fact that the Chinese attack was directed towards our external policy, the policy of non-alignment. China wanted India to be dislodged from its fundamental policy, and if that happens, it would mean the smaller nations of Asia and the newly emergent nations of Africa would have no hope of non-aligned existence. China's activities in those areas are not unknown. Our defense preparedness has therefore to be related to this assessment of Chinese threat. Militarily, we have to be sufficiently strong to resist violations of our borders as well as aggression across our frontiers. The consciousness that our country's defenses are sufficiently strong to repel any aggression is the minimum guarantee that we have to give to the people of India to pursue peacefully their economic development through democratic means. Our defense efforts cannot be conceived entirely or directly in narrow military terms. The pace of economic development has to be kept up, and I can assure you that we propose to do so. When the Chinese government launched aggression against us, we were in the earlier stages of our third five-year plan. Even in the midst of that aggression, our National Development Council, under the chairmanship of the Prime Minister, took a decision that whatever may be the sacrifices involved in strengthening our defenses, there should not be any reduction in the size of our economic program, because that would strike at the very roots of our progress and possibly achieve for China without waging a battle the objective that it has in mind. For this reason, we not only maintain the pace of implementation of the plan, but increase the plan allocations in certain vital sectors: agriculture, industry, transport, and communications. As may be expected, the Chinese aggression has imposed heavy burden on us. Our defense expenditure, which in 1961-62 expressed in dollars, was $960 million, increased to $1,620 million in 63-64. During the current financial year, we have planned an expenditure of $1,720 million. To meet this defense expenditure, the people of India have not only accepted unprecedented tax burdens, but have come forward generously to donate gold and money to the government for the defense effort. We are making sacrifices and will continue to do so. We are determined to carry through the current five-year plan without any significant scaling down. We hope external aid in adequate measure will be available in support of the special effort that we are undertaking. We are resolved to meet the Chinese threat on all fronts, whatever may be the sacrifice, because what we are defending is our hard-won freedom, our democratic way of life, our love for liberty, our heritage of tolerance, and our desire for peace. These are the values for which hundreds of thousands of American young men have shed their blood and given their lives to distant battlefields all over the world. You know how dear these values are to you. During my brief stay in Washington, I found in the mind of your administration an awareness of the problem of the defense of India. I would like you to realize that the effect of the effort India is making to build up our defense potential to meet aggression from an untrustworthy neighbor is an effort to save democracy and democratic values in that sensitive part of the world. Thank you very much.